tough love or beneficiary bashing. The government has greenlit its new welfare regime, ramping up its crackdown.
This announcement is all about rights and responsibilities.
Take the steps you need to take and be compliant.
They should be focused on getting people back into work rather than kicking people when they're down.
Kia ora, ko Craig McCullough kaho, wene te pūrongo tōranga pū mō tēnei wiki. Welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Craig McCullough. With Parliament in recess this week, the Coalition used the clear air to clear the decks, rattling through a laundry list of announcements. Congestion charging, genetic engineering, and two separate ministry overhauls, one at Te Arawhiti and the other at Whaikaha. But the announcement the government tried hardest to highlight was its new hardline approach to welfare. National campaigned on introducing a traffic light warning system, and on Monday, the government pressed go.
A life on welfare is not the way to maximise a young person's creativity and untapped potential, and we want so much more for our young people. So we will do everything that we can to support people off welfare and into work, and ultimately a better life for themselves and for their families.
Our welfare system will be based on the clear expectation that those who can work should work.
The Social Development Minister, Louise Upston, made the announcement alongside the Prime Minister.
This traffic light system will make it crystal clear to beneficiaries what is required of them and notify them when they are not meeting those expectations. They can expect to be having more regular contact with MSD about what activities they need to do or what seminars they need to attend to continue receiving payments.
From now on, all beneficiaries who are required to be looking for work or preparing for it will be categorised as either green, orange or red. If a person fails to meet their obligations, say they miss a work seminar or job training course, then they'll be shifted from green to orange and given 5 working days to provide an excuse or a plan for putting it right. Those who don't will be given a red status and be hit with a sanction.
All we're doing is just making sure that everybody understands their obligations. It's really straightforward. You're either fully compliant, you're either sort of out of whack and you need to get into whack pretty quickly within 5 days, or alternatively you're not compliant, and that's got some serious consequences.
Cabinet has also signed off on plans to bolster the regime, introducing a raft of new requirements and punishments due to kick in from early next year. Job seekers will have to reapply for the benefit more frequently, every 6 months instead of annually, and all will have to have updated resumes. Those who fail to meet their obligations will also face a tougher time. Past transgressions will stay on their record for 2 years, twice as long as now.
Not wiping their slates clean after a year makes it more likely their benefits will be cancelled if they remain on them for more than 12 months.
New sanctions will also be brought online, increasing the variety of penalties which can be applied. Right now, the only options are halting a person's benefit or cutting it in half. But from early next year, there will be other options. They could instead be required to carry out community work experience or be put on money management. That would mean half their benefit would go on a payment card, restricting where and what they can spend it on.
There's a payment card that already exists for those on the youth payment or the youth parent payment. So it's extending that. So basically it means they would get 50% of their benefit on a payment card that's preloaded with, you know, supermarkets and things like that. So they know what they can purchase, but it just means less choice around how their benefit is spent. No, you can't buy cigarettes, you can't buy alcohol, etc. The intention of this is to ensure people get the same amount of benefit, but it is a sanction. It's a consequence of not complying with their obligations, so it does need to have an impact.
And become compliant again and meet your full obligations, and that sanction goes away.
The plan in its whole is driven by core National Party principles and policy, as the Prime Minister repeatedly reiterated, rights and responsibilities. It comes as part of a wider reset of the system, taking a tougher line. For example, about 10,000 sanctions were issued during the June quarter, up more than 50% from the year before. The most common offence, not attending appointments.
We're just saying to New Zealanders, look, it's fair, it's about fairness and it's about mutual obligation, and just saying, hey, listen, the vast majority of people receiving a benefit are going to be fully compliant, but actually for those that are not wanting to meet their obligations, there has to be consequences, because it's just not fair on those that are actually paying for that benefit to help their fellow New Zealander. And so that's the notion, as I keep saying, about rights and responsibilities.
The government has set itself the target of getting 50,000 people off the benefit by 2030. About 1,500 people had their payments cancelled last month alone for repeated failures to meet their obligations. The minister was asked, where did those people end up? What happened to them? And the answer was stark.
Not sure. So basically, my message is really clear. If you want to continue to receive the JobSeeker benefit, fulfil your obligations to look for and prepare for work.
But there are kids out there whose households relied on a benefit who no longer had any income.
Yep, so I'd say to those parents, it's pretty simple. We've got common sense rules around what you need to do to comply, and I would encourage you to take the steps you need to be compliant, and there'll be no impact, you'll be in green, and it'll be all go.
All go. It was clear the government was keen to put lights around this policy, its announcement timed for maximum publicity. And listener feedback on Tuesday's morning report showed why, demonstrating at least some strong appetite for the hardline approach.
This texter says, good on Mr. Luxon. I have a 31-year-old who has no interest in ever having a job. He's been on the unemployment benefit since 18. Only after a threat of being kicked out of home has he finally found a job.
This listener says meeting a caseworker or turning up for an interview is not beneficiary bashing. It's common sense and fair to all Kiwis. And others.
Christopher Luxon would have been happy then that the topic featured heavily on his Tuesday morning media blitz.
Your listeners today have woken up and going to work and struggling to get through the week, paying taxes to us, which goes to support their fellow Kiwis.
If you want to behave yourself, you'll be fine. If you don't want to behave
rights
yourself,
responsibilities, then, yeah. Show up.
We want to get people into work.
The sales pitch, though, did not go quite as he might have hoped. Mr. Luxon made several significant blunders across his suite of interviews. On both Newstalk ZB and TVNZ, he touted his government's efforts to help people into jobs.
We've got 4,000 more phone case managers coming on stream.
4,000 more phone case managers in.
2,100 more community job counsellors helping as well.
We've got 2,100 extra community organisations plugged in. With.
Except, of course, that is not the case. Not even close. Those numbers refer to the clients able to access that support, not the staff providing the service. When RNZ raised that with the Prime Minister a day later, he acknowledged the mistake, but claimed he'd then corrected himself in an interview not long after on Morning Report.
But I corrected it for Radio New Zealand. Yeah, I got it wrong.
Except he didn't correct it for RNZ until after he was called out. In reality, he repeated the error on Morning Report, only amending it when it was picked up by the interviewer, Ingrid Hipkiss.
Just can I stop you on that there? The counsellor, so it's not 4,000 extra counsellors, is it? Or is it 4,000 extra counselling sessions?
Sorry, 4,000 extra folk that will be helped.
Sure, okay.
That was not the only flub in that interview either. Mr. Luxon also stumbled when quizzed over the size of the unemployment benefit, exactly how much a job seeker might receive.
Do you know how much that is?
No, I don't, but not right now. I'll give you a precise number, but I don't know the precise number. I'll give it.
Could you give me a rough number?
No, I'm not going to do that because I want to make sure I get it right for you.
An unfortunate oversight given the subject matter. By later that morning, he had brushed up on the figures and laid out the range of support available, from $260 a week through to $630.
In the heat of an interview, I don't want to go off and not have time to actually explain how it actually all works, because it's not as simple as just a single number as I was being framed in that question.
It's true it's not a single number, but Mr. Luxon could have said that in the interview, and he didn't. He couldn't give a range or even a rough idea. It was a gift to the opposition, with Labour's Carmel Cipollone labelling the PM out of touch and out of his depth.
Look, he cites himself as being this great businessman, but he pays very little attention to detail. He doesn't know any of this stuff. He is completely removed from the reality of so many New Zealanders, particularly our poorest New Zealanders.
Labour described the announcement as an exercise in beneficiary bashing, with its leader Chris Hipkins accusing the coalition of kicking people when they were down.
Sanctions don't get people off benefit and into work if there aren't jobs for them to go to, and at the moment there aren't jobs for them to go to. Children will end up suffering disproportionately because they'll, you know, children in benefit dependent households will be forced below the poverty line, and then the intergenerational cycle of welfare dependence will be more likely to repeat itself.
So just a reminder, the sanction isn't if you can't find a job. The sanction is only if you're not taking the steps to help yourself.
The Greens argue those so-called steps to help oneself are often arbitrary and pointless, making people jump through hoops with little purpose. Here's Ricardo Menendez-March.
Right now, people have to go to work and income to sit down and complete a bunch of menial tasks. And I know this having worked at the front lines myself for years, that the current systems don't actually meaningfully support people into employment. So the government is going off on a limb here, just trying to add more punishment to a system that doesn't help people find jobs.
Both he and Labor object to the new money management sanction too, describing it as punitive and counterproductive.
Plenty of research in Australia has shown that compulsory money management actually creates really negative outcomes for people, both when it comes to creating more hardship, but that it also doesn't help people find a job.
There's plenty of evidence to suggest that the more subservient you make people, the less likely they are to end up in sustainable long-term employment where they can stand on their own two feet.
Like National, the ACT Party campaigned on electronic money management before the election, and it is explicitly referenced in their coalition agreement. David Seymour rejects the opposition's concerns. In fact, he'd like to go further.
Well, the previous government's approach to welfare policy was to make it as comfortable as possible to remain dependent. That was unbalanced. These changes restore balance, although ACT would say if you continue to have children while on a benefit, or if you stay on a benefit for a large amount of time, then the money should be received in the form of money management, an electronic card that can be used for certain purposes to ensure that money actually goes to the children, and people who want flexibility have more incentive to seek work, like the people who are paying the taxes to fund the benefits in the first place.
Critics have questioned the evidence base for the government's approach. Steve Turnock from Wellington's Downtown Community Ministry says it ignores the complicated lives of those on the breadline.
What we're not taking into account are factors such as high levels of addictions, substance abuse, mental health, violence, a lot of poor social impacts that are actually having a direct consequence on these decisions. So unless we're addressing those, it won't matter what criteria we put on, because those other things will still be present and they will still have a influence on the decision making of the people we're talking about.
A similar message too from Brooke Powell at Auckland Action Against Poverty.
Continuing to punish communities that are already being punished, further stressing them out, like communities that are already stressed, isn't helpful. It's actually harmful. They're going to create more harm in our communities. This isn't going to do any good.
In 2019, the Welfare Expert Advisory Group published a report which found, quote, little evidence to support using obligations and sanctions to change behaviour. It cited research showing that instead they compounded social harm and disconnectedness. Checkpoint's Lisa Owen pushed the point with the minister.
The sanctions are a motivator to take the steps that you need to take.
Yeah, but where is the evidence? Where is the evidence? Can you point to a piece of research that shows?
Yep, MSD's report in 2010 indicated that the sanctions do improve work exits. And again, the work obligations are very simple, common sense steps that will help someone find a job or get ready for a job. And that's what we want to see people do.
Minister, probably the most recent investigation into that is the Welfare Advisory Group, who looked into and studied beneficiaries here and internationally, and research showed sanctions don't work as an incentive. In fact, they have adverse consequences.
Well, as I said, there is research also from MSD that says...
But that's outdated. This is more recent, what I'm quoting
here. They do improve work exits. Look, at the end of the day, we want to see more people in work. And so going to job interviews, having an up-to-date CV, those are the very common sense steps that will help someone and improve their chances of being in work. which is what we want to see.
Minister, are you cherry-picking data from more than a decade ago?
No. Look, if you look at what we have inherited, unfortunately we have seen a massive increase in the number of people on JobSeeker benefit at a time that there were jobs everywhere. And it was no surprise that a 58% increase in the number of job seekers was at a time we saw a 57% reduction in the number of sanctions applied. That means people weren't taking steps to find a job when there were jobs everywhere.
The statistics tell a stark tale and foretell a tough task. In June 2017, about 120,000 people were receiving job seeker support. By June last year, that number had climbed to about 175,000. That's despite record unemployment and employers crying out for workers. Since the change in government, though, and the economy slowing, the number of job seekers has continued to rise. As of June this year, there were almost 200,000 job seekers. Times are tough, and unemployment is rising. Given the trajectory, the government will find its goal of slashing benefit numbers moving further out of reach, meaning it may have to lean harder still on its much stricter regime. The crackdown may only just be gearing up. That's Focus on Politics. I'm Craig McCulloch. Thank you for joining me. Mā te wā.